I see how far we've fallen. That I most certainly see. And I look at this statement by Health and Human Services Secretary Alex Azar. He said that he wants to be transparent, wants everybody to know that what they're doing by ripping these kids away from their parents and you know, putting these kids into cages with aluminum foil blankets, they want to be transparent. They've got nothing to hide. They want people to know how they operate these facilities. He goes on to say it, and this is one of those moments where you go, in politics, one of the ideas is if you have a weakness, you try and make it a strength. And you attack other people's strengths and try and make it their weakness. You know, John Kerry was the perfect example with all the Swift voting. Azar says, and this is just mind-blowing to me. He goes, what they're doing is one of the great, great acts of American generosity and charity. What we're doing for these undocumented kids who are smuggled into the country and come across illegally. It's a great act of charity. What we're doing is ripping them out of their parents' arms and ripping them away from people. It's an act of charity. I got to be honest. I question the definition of charity. Just literally mind-blowing. Anyway, here to share some thoughts on this and also maybe a little bit on the Supreme Court. I've asked our good friend David Yankovich to come talk with us. David, what do you think? Act of charity?
I don't know. How much of an act of charity is it for a 10-month-old baby to not be bathed for 52 days, be covered in lice, separated from her parents or his parents, and finally given back? I mean, in my mind, that's not an act of charity. That's an act of child abuse. And they're committing horrendous acts of child abuse. And basically, the way that I view this, and maybe I have the unpopular opinion, but I look at this at the beginning of World War II and what the Germans were doing. And I know everybody does that all the time, and it's been cliche, but what they're doing to these children and what they're doing to separate people and the way that they're dehumanizing human beings, that is exactly what every single atrocity in the history of this country that, or in the world that's ever been done has always began the same way, dehumanize people. When you do that, you have things like this happening. His base thinks it's okay. Not only do they think it's okay, they love it. Yeah, definitely not an act of charity. A very horrible and shameful chapter in the history of our country right now. And I'm looking forward to reading the history books about 30 years from now when they just completely tear all these guys apart.
I hope that's the case, because my problem is what happens if they win and this becomes the history? What becomes the history is we were so charitable to those immigrants, and we were so charitable to them. And, you know, granted, we snatched their children away and we sold them off and did all that stuff, but we did it with charity in our heart.
Well, first of all, they're not going to win. That's another part of history. Walls fall, you know, tyrants fail, and good usually overcomes. Not always, but usually. I wrote an article about the presidency of Donald Trump before Donald Trump got elected president. It was a hypothetical. Basically, if he gets everything that he said on Twitter, what it would look like in this country.
Yep. And in fact, we had you on to talk about that very article.
Yep. And you had me on to talk about that article. And I read through it the other day. Someone brought it up to me because I'd almost forgot about it. And I was pretty dead on. I mean, it's not as bad as it could have been. And the reason for that is because so many people have stood up and said, no way, you know, this is not happening. You know, the resistance forms, you know, these groups, the marches. I figured at the first sign of someone getting beat with a billy club, you know, everybody would say, yeah, that's not going to be me and my family. But no, you know, this country has a resolve and a resilience that is stronger than Donald Trump and the Republicans. It was stronger than Nixon, you know, it was all the way throughout the back, all the way to the founding of this country. I really firmly believe that we are going to kick their asses, and it's going to happen in November, and it's going to happen in 2020. My fear is what happens after that, and can people get organized and come on the same side and keep fighting in 2022 and 2024, and also pay attention to the local races. I do think that nationally, I think we're going to win the House back. I think that we're going to take the Senate. I know we're going to take the presidency. Donald Trump will be a one-term president. I don't care what anybody says. If he's not impeached by then. The problem is are you paying attention to your city council? Are you paying attention to your school board? Are you paying attention to, you know, the county commissioner, the tax collector? Are you paying attention to your state representatives, your state senator, assembly? All that matters just as much as the presidential election, or just as much as congressional or Senate. But we will win. We're going to.
No, and this election is, you know, I've been saying, look, I love the fact that there are people out in the streets. In fact, there were people out in the street across the country today protesting against Brett Kavanaugh's nomination for the Supreme Court. And that's great. We want that. I love the fact that people are out marching in the streets. But the important march comes on November 6th, when you march to the polls and you throw the bums out.
That is an important march. I mean, that's two of three. You know, we have to win in November, and I'm saying right now we have to show up. We have to put our differences aside, and show up and win in November. If we don't, if you thought the last 2 years was bad, wait until the sequel.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. But how do you do that? I mean, because here's the thing: I get every day, and I'm sure you do as well. I get people who want to relitigate 2016. You know, Bernie, if we had Bernie, we wouldn't be here, you know, or, you know, if you know, this or if that, where we, it seems that, you know, even on the Democratic side, where you're really under siege, there's a division, and you go, you know, here's the thing that gets me. I mean, if you're in a foxhole, and we're all in this foxhole trying to figure out how to save the future of this country, you know, why are you tearing yourselves apart?
That's a really good question, and I don't have an answer to for you. This is what I tell people. So when they say, you know, the Bernie versus Hillary, or the far left versus the moderate left, or whatever the disagreement is going to be, I say the same thing every time. Who cares? Like, it's not 2016, it's 2018, and literally children are getting their health care ripped away. Like, literally, there are children dying in our country right now over this. There are immigrants with their families being ripped apart. It doesn't matter. Like, I don't care what your difference is. If you disagree with me on the fiscal policy of Southeast Asia, you know, come on, get together. Like, do we care about kids getting killed or not? Like, are you going to vote the right way? Or are you going to vote against it? Or are you going to stay home? If you can stay home, don't complain to me. If you can actually watch, you know, what's happening at the border and what they're doing with these families and everything, and still vote against a candidate who vows to fight against that type of thing because you disagree with them on a fiscal policy, don't talk to me. And that's not a Democrat. You know, that is a troll. And you were just talking about that in your monologue. And another part of this, too, is we are being divided on social media by Russia with the ads that they're doing and stuff like that. And we're also being divided by the Republicans. You know, they want us to be mad at each other. They use these issues to divide us and to get us riled up and everything. Like, literally, human rights is at stake. You know, the women's right to choose is at stake. Like, this is a time that is so, like, important that we come together. And if you're gonna disagree with a candidate over an issue and not vote for him and stay home in the face of all this, then I don't know what to tell you, but you don't have the right to talk to me about it. No. Or anybody.
No, I go back to 2016, and I talked about the Supreme Court almost the entire year of seeing this exact scenario playing out, to where you get two original intent justices on the court, maybe even a third by the time it's over, and you know, virtually every bit of the 20th century being repealed. And you know, this is what we're looking at, and this is what's kind of concerning to me, because I don't think most people have read the history and understand where we're going back to. It's not, you know, it's not the good old days of the 40s and 50s. No, you know, where Trump claims he wants to take us back. No. We're going to go back well before that. And the desperation and the hunger and the mistreatment and all of that, we're going to make that stuff great again.
Yeah, I mean, that's we're looking at this. And I remember you saying this on your show. Donald Trump campaigned talking about the court all the time. I got to put the judge on the court. You know, I mean, he campaigned on it. We really didn't touch that on the Democratic side in 2016. We didn't talk about the Supreme Court in the way that the Republicans did. You know, what Mitch McConnell did, and basically he did put Donald Trump into the presidency, and what he did in the terms of holding up the court and doing all that, it was, and I hate saying this, it was a masterstroke in treachery of this country. But it was something that they did, and we lost. We lost when he put the first nominee up, and we're losing again when they're putting a second nominee up. And if Democrats want to start winning again, if we want to start taking back some offices, we have to come together and we have to put some differences aside. And you brought that up in your monologue again too today. You know, the Republican Party, doesn't matter who you're talking to, they're like robots. They know exactly what their talking points are. If you go from Fox News, if you go to InfoWars, if you go to the guy, you know, working at the hardware store, if you go to anybody, the local radio host, they're all on the exact same talking point. And I can always tell because I'll be talking to my family members who are Republican, and they'll start spewing something new. And I know that something must have came out on the news, and they got their talking point all the way through the base. The Democrats don't have that message of or the organizational structure of that to talk all the way through the base like that. So while we're like spinning everywhere and arguing about everything and fighting, they're completely organized and marching straight down the lane at us. And they do see this as a war, and I've said this a million times, and they are winning. And the only way that we can win is if we come together and do the same thing, and that is putting the past behind us, putting, you know, all the deceit and all the things that everybody feels and all the hurt feelings and all that, you know, put it behind us. Kids are dying right now. They're trying to rip chip away. They're killing health care. Tonight, it just broke on CNN that Trump's slashing funding that helps people sign up for Obamacare. Like, all these issues that are really going to hurt people. We got to put all the past aside. It's time to work on the now and figure out how we move forward. And the only way to move forward is if we all lock arms and get on one message.
No, you're right. And strategically, you know, we just talked about this over the weekend. The they're temporarily halting payments to the risk adjustment program that they had, simply because it's going to throw the system into chaos. They'll eventually pay it, but it's going to be down the road. It's going to be at a point to where the insurance companies have said, well, maybe we get this, maybe we don't. We've got to, in defense of getting screwed, raise the rates on everyone so that they get their talking point. And this is where the Republicans are brilliant. You got to give them credit. They're masters at manipulating all of the systems, because they've spent, you know, millions and hundreds of millions of dollars on think tanks and people who think up all of the crazy stuff to do. You got to give them credit, I guess, on a certain vein of knowing just how to destroy, how to be good destroyers.
Well, the thing I was thinking about earlier today, I was in a meeting, like, we're going to get to 2024. And there's going to be a $5 trillion deficit or whatever the number is. I'd have to look it up again. But there's going to be a $1 trillion plus deficit 2024. And right, they're going to be running for president. Who are they going to blame that on? They're not going to blame it on President Trump and the Republican-controlled Congress in 2018. They're going to blame it on the Democratic-controlled Congress and the Democratic president in 2024. That is why they're brilliant, because they're able to do that and they're able to find somebody to blame, because that's honestly what they've been doing for the last 100 years. Find someone to blame, put it on them, and, you know, usually it's a minority. You know, I have this pinned tweet on my Twitter account that says, you know, when your boss has had an increase of 937% income over the last, since 1978, the average worker's only got a 5.7% increase. But the Republicans will never tell you why that really is. They just will, you know, they'll blame it on a minority. They'll blame it on this guy's taking your job. You can be in the most Caucasian white area in the country and you can talk to those guys and they'll be like, yeah, they are taking our jobs. There's not even any way there to take your job. And that's how brilliant they are at this. They have it from the top, middle, down, grassroots, talking radio, email, communications, fake news websites, all of it, always working in complete concert with one another. And if we really want to win, we have to talk about corruption, we have to fight for women, and we got to come together.
Yeah. And what ends up happening is you get the simple-minded who will throw out MAGA or, you know, the Democrats are done, or, you know, some jingoistic kind of language that, you know, that makes them feel superior when they themselves are probably going to suffer just as much as anyone else. And that's the thing that gets me. And this is the struggle that I have, because I know a lot of these maggots. I know these trolls. I know these people who, you know what, when unions get crushed even further, their wages are going to go down too. When health care is slashed, their access to care is going to be lessened. When they cut, you know, funding to the local school district, it's their kids who are going to suffer less opportunity. And I go, you know, where's this disconnect? How do you not get that?
Well, once all that happens, they're going to turn around and blame it on the Democrats all over again, because our messaging isn't there right now. Like we don't have the wherewithal to fight back on it. That's the reason why we are where we are. That's the reason why we can't convince, you know, Republican voters that the GOP is screwing them, because they're so much better at it. Like literally, like if you're a white working class guy going to a factory job and you wake up in the morning, the first thing you check is your email. You have a chain letter. Then you're on your way to work and you're talking heads on the radio. You're, you know, the Republican radio. Then you get on your lunch break and, you know, it's on Fox News. Like, they're completely saturated in the culture of Republican, you know, talking points. Everywhere they go, their friends, everything. And they're angry. And they're angry because all they do is they're watching this stuff on TV, and it's not true, and it's going granular inside of them. It makes them mad. So the only way that we beat them is if we talk about corruption, but we have to. We have to. I mean, I think I saw a poll that said, like, 80% of people believe that Washington, D.C. is more corrupt under Donald Trump. That's bipartisan numbers.
Of course.
And that's not, but that's the thing. It's like, that's how, these are the issues that we win on, you know, and everybody, Republican and Democrat, is happy to say Washington's corrupt. But the Democrats have to tell people why, and they have to be able to sell this. And I'm not completely bashing the Democratic Party, because they've made huge strides this year. I mean, they're really working hard to, you know, to fix this and to, you know, get back on track. But we have to go a long way still. And, you know, last show I was on, I talked about, you know, the use of social media and meme warfare and that kind of stuff. But it goes even deeper than that. It goes, you know, all the way through Congress and the representatives all the way down. I mean, they have a unified message. And the Democrats, I can't even tell you the national party's message. I can't tell you the Senate committees or the House committee. I can't tell you state party messages or brand. I mean, for them, you know, I mean, here, I'll ask you, Rick, what are the three things that Republicans want?
They want small government, tax cuts, and God, guns, and gays, man.
Yeah, and what do Democrats want?
there's a lot about equality. There's a lot about opportunity. There's a lot about verbiage on fairness. But it's that. It's muddled. It's lots of words, and it's hard to understand.
And in a time where people read the length of a headline,
and it doesn't fit on a bumper sticker.
Yeah.
Because sadly, that's the society we've become, David. I mean, you know, and this is where Republicans got that. And this is where Trump is brilliant. I mean, if you watch his speeches, he speaks at about a third, maybe a beginning fourth grade level, so that everyone in the audience can understand. And that's, I'll be honest, that's masterful.
Well, I mean, but that's the thing, is this isn't who we've become. This is who we've always been. Well, I like Ike. You know, I mean, like, you, the slogans and those buzz phrases have always worked. The New Deal, you know, like, you have to put this on a bumper sticker. You have to put it in a way that the massive population will be interested in learning more about it.
Yeah.
We're not talking build that wall. You know, like, I mean, when you have these types of phrases that are very simple and very direct, you know exactly what it stands for. On the Democratic side, you know, we have to have those same types of phrases. And honestly, we're better at this. We have the smarter people in the country. We have the better comedians. there's no reason why we should be behind. We just have to get on a coordinated message, and we're getting there. But, you know, right now this Supreme Court fight, you know, this is one of those times where everybody's got to come together.
Last question I've got for you.
Especially.
No, I'm with you. Last question I've got. Is there any way to stop that? Do you see any way of stopping Kavanaugh sitting on the court?
Legislatively, no. The Senate's outgunned. The Democratic Party doesn't have enough strength to take it. The only way that we can possibly do anything is if we can pressure Republicans into not voting for him, and get all the Democrats to vote against it. And that's the only way we do this. And the way you put that pressure on it is on social media, you know, doing the same things we do with the protesting and showing up. The resistance can stop it. The Democrats in the Senate don't have the firepower to be able to do anything for it, but social media can. If you put enough pressure on them, if you fight enough, if you scream enough, if you get loud enough, if you show up and you march, then you might be able to do something. But the Democrats in Congress, the Senate, they don't have the firepower to do anything to stop this.
Well, like I said, make the calls. Call your senator. Call all the senators, especially the three Democrats, Manchin, Donnelly, and Heitkamp. Also, Collins and Murkowski. Even your guy, Doug Jones, give him a yell as well. At least that's my thought. David, I appreciate the time, man. Great talking with you.
Thanks for having me, Rick. Have a great night.
You as well. As always, our good friend, David Yankovich. Let's take a quick break. Right back. Stick around. Listen to the Rick Smith Show.